Hi, I'm Dana Gresh with a fun question to ask your kids. What's the largest living organism in the world? Your first thought's probably a blue whale, but that is not the correct answer. It's actually a tree in the Fish Lake National Forest in Utah that's so big it even has a name, Pando. And it's not a giant sequoia, commonly known as a redwood. It's an aspen tree. More specifically, it's a clonal colony of an individual male quaking aspen. You could drive for miles until you come to the end of this magnificent site. Pando, also known as the trembling giant for the way the leaves shake in the wind, looks like an entire forest of trees. But genetic markers have been identified in each tree trunk, proving that they share one massive underground root system. The plant spreads across 106 acres and is thought to weigh 6,600 tons. For the record, that's about 33 blue whales. And here's something about this tree that I find specifically fascinating. It has survived frequent forest fires because of its deep, wide-spreading roots. When fires rage through Pando, its root system is protected from the heat. The underground life source of the organism thrives and eventually sends new seedlings up into the fertile soil the fire leaves behind. By contrast, conifers, which also grow in that area, have shallow root systems. When a fire comes through, it consumes these trees entirely. Roots are powerful things. Let's consider that as I attempt to prodigal-proof your child. What is our responsibility as parents as we gaze into the rising tide of prodigals on the planet? Because for about 10 years, we've been witnessing a mass exodus of young adults from the church, and it's gotten worse in the last 12 months. In early 2021, organizations that keep their pulse on statistical changes related to our beliefs, well, they were reporting an escalation in the departure of our precious children as they become young adults. The heat of the fire was rising, and it seems the flame was fanned by COVID-19 and the resulting communal changes. Somehow, the environment just got right for those shallow roots to be, well, uprooted. I came across this chilling quote from David Kinnaman recently. He's with the Barna Group. He says, "We know that 22% of young people today are what we call prodigals. That number grew by double from 10 years ago. What it will look like in 10 years is hard to know, but we think the pandemic is actually going to accelerate that problem." The roots of many of our young adults, born, fostered, nurtured through the church, as they've gone through this pandemic, their roots weren't deep enough. And so today I want to give you the gift of asking you a question. Are the roots of your child being adequately nurtured? Could you consider that as I read a parable that Jesus told when he walked the earth? This is Mark chapter 4. Verses 3-9. Jesus said, "Listen, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Other seed fell on rocky ground, where it did not have much soil, and immediately it sprang up, since it had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. And other seeds fell into good soil and produced grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And he said, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." I believe we're seeing this parable unfold before us. The birds of prey are eating the seed that we're planting. The rocky road of life is resulting in wilted shoots, and the thorns are choking out the faith of our children. Some scholars say that the rocks and the thorns could represent difficult times. Well, we just lived through what could surely be characterized as global difficult times, and it's revealing a lack of roots in the belief system of our children. What are we going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? That last phrase of that verse says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." And that might be better said, if you understand this, do something. So let's get busy, friend, because I understand and you do too. Let's consider the roots of belief in our children. Of course, you're hearing my voice because you're a sower. You're planting seeds in your children. And many of us as parents are careful to plant the seeds. We take them to church. We send them to Awana. We have family defos. We check off the to-do list of planting truth in our children. But the question I want to ask today is, do we tend to the roots? Are we mindful of the fact that there is a to-be quality, not just a to-do, but a to-be quality when it comes to nurturing what we've planted? We need to be what we plant so the roots of our children's beliefs are strong. So let's ask ourselves, are we being intentional to plant truth, not busy lessons, not rote material, not intentional Christian-y performance? Are we planting and nurturing truth? I'm talking about something that goes beyond the surface and overtakes the deepest parts of our child's hearts. It's more than just controlling and conforming behavior to what we think is right. It's nurturing something deep within them so that they know what is right and they do it according to God's word. For over 2 decades, I've studied the moral development of children, and I did this as a mom for my own benefit, but I'd like to share with you something really important that I discovered. We tend to develop our beliefs in 3 stages. Now, you won't find the names of these 3 phases that I'm going to introduce to you in child development textbooks. The authors of those books have letters behind their names like P, H, and D, and they use big fat words. These are the names I've given these phases so that they'll be easy for me to remember. The first phase is the copycat phase. Children begin to develop their moral fabric from really a really early age, beginning between the ages of 2 and 5. And the primary way they form their belief is by imitating you. They're copycats. They are watching, observing, and copying every movement you make every day. For this reason, a girl, for example, she's going to want everything her mom has, like a cell phone or a little plastic kitchen. Her little heart is saying, "Mommy does it. I want to be like mommy because I like her. I'll do it too." So she cooks or works on her computer or makes a call on her cell phone because she sees you do it. And guess what? She also says thank you. She's helpful or empathic because she's copying her parents, or she's not because she doesn't have that to copy. Now, she's just beginning to grow a tender little system of truth roots. And this phase of moral development, it's merely introductory. Nothing cemented just yet, but exciting things can be happening if you begin the planting and the nurturing of truth. And that's why it's so important you greet your husband with love and respect. It's why you need to be honest with your business dealings, even if it's returning something small to the grocery store that ended up in the bottom of the cart. Children see, they remember. And that gets planted into their belief system. In short, this copycat phase is really the big planting phase. But the next phase is the counseling phase. We're still planting, but we're also beginning to nurture. Between the ages of 6 and 11, your child is learning truth by asking you why you believe what you believe and do what you do. Now, this interactive phase, it's very interactive, is characterized by asking a lot of questions. Everything is a life lesson, from eating vegetables to painting a room together. A little child's mouth, they just can't keep up with all the questions in their brain, and they're sorting through truth and deciding what they believe. A boy, for example, might ask, "Why does daddy do that? I think I want to be like dad. But does he really like doing that? Does it feel good? What if I don't like it? Maybe I'll do it too if he tells me why he does it." If something makes sense to him, he'll embrace it, do it, believe it. And if it doesn't, he's going to keep asking questions. He'll keep questioning. Now, I call it the counseling phase because there are so many questions and there's lots of dialogue and conversation. And to be sure, you are still planting new age-appropriate truth in your children. But now you get to counsel a child as he or she figures out what they believe. They are, in a very literal sense, kicking the tires of your faith. Now, this phase of moral development can be downright exhausting, exasperating for a parent. It's quite literally tempting to move quickly past the questions, thinking they're not important, but they are so important. Nurturing roots of truth is time consuming. Just like it takes time to water a garden, fertilize a garden, weed a garden, it takes time to protect the seeds of truth that you've planted in a child. And here's where I can show you the difference between planting truth and nurturing the roots. A few years ago, I was volunteering in children's church and was teaching on Sabbath. Ruby, a girl I adore, approached me during free time. "What is the Sabbath? Well, is it on Sunday or Saturday? What does resting mean? Who's supposed to do it? Does that mean you can't cook or make your bed? Can you brush your teeth?" Questions just pouring out of this sweet girl's heart, and I answered them one by one. And Ruby finally fell quiet. She sat still, but I could see that her little brain was still processing thoughts. And then she said, "My mom and dad don't believe in Sabbath. They might say they do. They've taught me about it, but they don't rest on Sundays. Dad works on his papers, and mom cleans a lot." Simplistic example, but also a telling one. We got to live out what we plant in our children's belief system, or it doesn't have the right soil to nurture those seeds into strong roots. So imagine this. All those good seeds you planted, they're being tested every time a child asks why. They're essentially saying, "How good is the soil in this spot?" And you can think of the why as a proverbial soil testing kit. And the soil they're testing is yours. They want to see how deeply planted the seeds you've been putting in their lives are rooted in your life. Sobering, isn't it? Let's get back to Mark 4 again. It's called the parable of the sower, but I think maybe it should be called the parable of the soils. And it says that some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Other seed fell on rocky soil where it did not have much soil. Some seed fell into the beaten path. Those seeds don't have anything to nurture them into growth. There's no roots at all, right? Some say the beaten path might represent a hard heart. Now, most children don't get born with one of those. They develop. And sometimes they develop hard hearts because the world they live in is either toxic and dangerous, but they also can develop it because it's an inauthentic world they live in. And that's what I want to talk to you about. You might think of it as the parents who drop their kids off at church, or the creasters, those who go to church only on Christmas and Easters. Now, I suspect that's not you, but some fell onto gravel with no topsoil. Those seeds pop right up. They look like they're growing. They're conforming to everything we hope and dream, but the roots don't actually get very deep. This might be where we should pay attention. It might be you. It might be me. It could represent the parents who do all the right things to plant seeds, but they don't take time to nurture the roots that are growing beneath the surface. How deep is the soil? Are the things being taught deeply rooted in your own life, authentically lived out? Are there rocky places that need to be cleaned up, roots that need to be weeded out? This sower could be us. We must invite the why questions. They help us check the soil. Just this past year, one of my adult children has really asserted the question, why do we do church the way we do it? This is an adult. Now, I could have become defensive. I could have tried to prove how good and perfect the soil of our home has been for our child. I could have become despondent about the soil of this particular child's heart. Here's what I decided to do. I checked my own pH levels to see if anything this child was asking about needed to be adjusted in the soil of my heart. And guess what? I did make some changes. And I've actually been a part of a church that's making some changes. The Lord used my child's questions to take me to a deeper place in terms of my own understanding about church, of my own understanding about how important Sabbath is. God commands it. God commands Sabbath. He commands rest. And He reaffirms that in the New Testament. What He wants of me is two things, rest and sacred gathering. Rest and sacred gathering. Now, I'm not great at either. I was doing both a bit reluctantly, but not anymore. Because my adult child's why do we do Sunday the way we do it? Why do we do church the way we do it? It helped me adjust my belief and my behavior. And now I'm praying it can be believable to my child. If I were Ruby's mom, I'd be adjusting my habits to legitimately practice a Sabbath in a way that makes it believable to my daughter. That's the kind of thing we do when we nurture roots. We make our faith authentic, believable, something worth clinging to. So those tender roots of faith have something to believe in. When we have conversations like this and we make changes to our world, to our own belief system, when we check our own soil, that's truth counseling in motion. I guess you could actually say we're counseling our own hearts, which in many ways, our hearts are the soil where our child seed is nurtured. But this, the counseling phase, is one where those roots get watered, fertilized, nurtured so they can grow strong. Can I ask you a question? What comes to mind when you ask yourself if you're living out the truth you're planting into your children? Do you need to make any adjustments? Now, don't think too hard, because this doesn't mean your life has to be perfect. I live on a farm and I know something about good soil. There's some manure in there. If there's a little of that in your family, well, there's a lot of it in mine. In fact, several years ago, Bob and I took our young adult children out for dinner. We knew that through their growing years, we'd not been perfect. There were moments of big bumps, marriage challenges, ministry challenges, and little ones, losing our cool with our kids. I guess I shouldn't call sin bumps, but there were moments of sin in our lives. And our kids had front row seats to watch it unfold. They felt it happen. And now that they were adults, we wanted to talk to them about something we'd been telling them all along. We're not perfect. We know we've hurt you at times. That does not mean that what we've been teaching you to believe is not true. It just means we're still learning, we're still growing, we're still weeding things out of our hearts and nurturing our own roots. And right then and there, we told our kids we'd pay for the Christian counseling, and guess what? They've made a good on that a time or two. Listen, I'm not encouraging you to be a picture-perfect parent, just an authentic one. In fact, picture-perfect, that's kind of the opposite of what I'm encouraging you, because you can perform all you want, but unless your family is authentically living out what you believe and regrouping after the failures and hurts, the seeds you've planted in your child, they're on rocky ground. When the real testing happens, there will not be a root holding them to the soil of their faith. Now remember, perfect parents, there's only ever been one. And he walked with his children every day in a garden named Eden. Well, that perfect father had children whose beliefs got off track. If you're sure you've worked diligently to plant and nurture roots of truth into the child that seems off track right now, apply grace. But if you're still in the midst of copycat and coaching, use this message as a wake-up call. Do a little soil testing for the sake of your children. So by the end of your child's tween years, the basics of their belief system are generally in place. The end of that coaching phase. Not everything is accurate just yet, but that's why the last phase of moral development matters too. Let's talk about the coaching phase. By the age of 12, a child is actively living out a set of moral values. This phase involves more reasoning, as he or she allows what they believe to affect their behavior. And at this point, you're now an observer. You are the observer, rather than them observing you. And the questions in their head don't revolve around you anymore, but around themselves. How do I want to do this? Is there something I believe that will help me decide? Maybe I'll do it if it fits into what I believe. Now, I call this the coaching phase because it's kind of like watching your daughter play in a sport. She determines the plays, she makes the shots, and sometimes the fouls, but you're sitting on the sidelines waiting for her to take a break and rest on the bench beside you. Some of my most fond memories of my children's teen years were how they would sit on the edge of our bed at night, late at night, and it was like they came, they sat on the bench where we could coach them up. And there you'll have the chance to continue to influence what he or she believes by asking her why or him why they chose a certain behavior or emotion. Now you're asking why, and this is really the beginning of the harvest season for a parent. And yeah, I think you can and should begin to see this kind of harvest when a child is about 13 or 14 years old. Sometimes I don't think we expect enough of our teens. Mary was a teen when she gave birth to Jesus. The 12 who followed Jesus very closely were largely either teens or young adults. Let's expect it of them. Let's set them up to be fruitful and learn that pattern for their adult life. During those teen years, you should begin to find out what's in your child's belief system, what took root. Pay attention to what I say right now. If you don't like the fruit when they're in the early part of their counseling phase, their teen years, the roots need some tending to, not their behavior, the roots. You see, you can change behavior without changing roots. But if you change the roots, tend to the soil, uproot things that don't belong there, if you tend to the soil of your heart and theirs, behavior changes naturally. It's an extension of tending to the roots. So here's my prayer for you. I hope you get to see Mark 4, verse 8 blossom quite literally in your child's life. It says, and the other seeds fell into good soil and produced grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. So here's the deal. I've already alluded to it. Because God, the perfect Father, walked with Adam and Eve and they were prodigals. They rebelled. So you can't prodigal-proof your child. But you can live in confidence that you've done everything possible to see that they're nurtured in good soil, that they grow up to yield fruit. And when you take time to not only plant, but then nurture the roots of your child's belief system, you may get to watch those roots not only produce shoots, but fruit. They'll be mentoring others, serving the Lord, caring about sharing the gospel. This is the goal, not conforming them to behavior in those early years when the guardrails of family rules still keep them propped up. But when they're out there on the playing field of life, they are choosing to be fruitful. But if you're already there and that's not how it looks, I want to encourage you to, with these words written by my friend Sarah Walton. She's an author and a vibrant young Christian mom. Such a sweet, soft heart in this one. I adore her. And she told me, and I was surprised, that she once had a really hard heart. You know, like that beaten path where the soil just couldn't take seed no matter how often it was tossed. Sarah writes this. I was once that prodigal child, lost, angry, and struggling to find my identity, hardened on the outside, but deeply hurting within. The pain of my choices was not only destroying me, but creating heartache within our family and severing my relationships with the people who loved me most. By God's grace, my parents did not give up on me, despite how tempting it must have been at times. Instead, they entrusted my life to God, prayed for my brokenness, and fought for me in prayers that God eventually answered. And then she writes this. Parents, if you are raising a seemingly hard-hearted, rebellious son or daughter, whether outwardly or inwardly, I challenge you to take up your arms, fight the spiritual battle that rages over them with all your God-given strength, and refuse to give up on their life. That's from a woman who's fruitful, who's living out an authentic faith, whose roots are healthy and firm. And the fires of this life, and she's had a lot of them in her life, they're not burning up those healthy roots. In her teen years, her parents had to push reset. They had to go back to that sowing of seeds and nurturing of the soil and the roots, and now they have a fruitful child. Sarah is an example of a teen who didn't have deep roots. And her parents took that time, those coaching years, to say, hey, we need to replant some things here. We need to rip up some roots. We need to remove some rocks. We need to nurture some things in her life that we'd missed. And now Sarah's a fruitful young mom. And her roots are healthy. When the fires of life have come, it hasn't burned up those roots. And she's had a lot of fires in her life, Sarah Walton. But she's fruitful. I hope this gives you a little bit of hope. If you're in those coaching years and you're thinking this isn't going how it was supposed to go, push reset and get on your knees and pray. In fact, let me pray for you right now. Father God, I just thank you for every parent listening to my voice right now. No matter what stage of parenting they're in, whether they're in that copycat phase or that counseling phase or the coaching years, I pray, Father, that they go to this parable of the sower and they'd really consider carefully that we don't just plant the seeds, we have to then nurture them. We have to nurture the roots. We have to check the pH of our own soil, of the soil of our hearts, and make sure that our faith is believable. And I pray for the mom and the dad, the grandma, the grandpa who's praying for a prodigal. Would you reignite them with hope today? That you really do give us the opportunity to come in and rip up roots, to remove rocks, and to cultivate the soil so that those roots and those seeds that we planted long ago that aren't as healthy as they need to be, that they can be nurtured into a place of strength. I pray that for them. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, friend, for spending this time with me.